I would like to remind you that for more Microsoft webcasts, you can go to microsoft.com/webcasts. Thanks again for joining us for today's presentation, GeekSpeak, the Power Threading Library for Silverlight, featuring Jeffrey Richter. Now it's my pleasure to introduce today's first presenter, Glenn Gordon. Glenn, you now have the floor.
Great. Thanks very much, and welcome again to another one of our Wednesday GeekSpeak webcasts. As mentioned, my name is Glenn Gordon. I am a developer evangelist. I'm going to be your host for today's episode of GeekSpeak. And my co-host today is Andrew Duffy, a fellow developer evangelist. How's it going, Andrew?
It's going pretty good. How are you doing, Glenn?
I'm doing good. I am not socked in by ice and snow, but I hear you're getting there.
Well, we had very little snow yesterday. We had just enough to have a good snowball fight with the neighborhood kids, but this morning we're treated to a lovely coating of ice on top of the snow. So I looked out on my cul-de-sac this morning and looked very much like a glazed donut. So I'm not anticipating with much pleasure the next time I have to drive.
But yeah.
It's nice and warm here in the office, so I'm good to go.
So what better thing to sit inside and talk technology, right?
Exactly.
All right. So Andrew and I are developer evangelists. We work with the developer community. I'm based in Atlanta. Andrew is in the D.C. area. And we often present and speak at code camps, user groups, conferences, things like that. And the GeekSpeak series is an opportunity for us to get out of the limelight and instead serve as sort of proxies for your questions, people in the audience questions, to various industry experts. And we track down these experts and we find interesting topics that they want to take questions on and interesting projects they're working on and they want to share, and we facilitate that. So what we're going to encourage everybody to do as much as possible today for the next hour is to use the Q&A panel in live meeting here and type in your questions. It'll make for some great conversation with our guests today. Another thing we're going to be doing is preparing a list of links of things that are relevant to today's topic, things our guest talks about, relevant blogs to read, books you might want to get, code you might want to download, and we'll be posting that all up to our GeekSpeak blog, and we have that URL at the end of the slide deck for today, but if you just go and search for MSDN GeekSpeak, you'll get right to it. So let's bring on our guest. How about that, Andrew?
That sounds like a great idea. We're really pleased to have Jeffrey Richter with us. Jeffrey Richter is one of the first people that I think of when I think of experts on the internals of the .NET framework and the .NET development platform. He was one of the folks who co-founded Wintellect, which is a great consultancy and training company, probably one of the top names in terms of .NET training and consulting. And I'm not going to go through the long list of books. Jeffrey actually just reminded me of a photo he found of the two of us signing books together at PDC. And I said that not necessarily to aggrandize myself, but only because I remember feeling very small compared to Jeffrey's huge stack of books that he kept selling and watching as more people came up to sign his books because, well, he sold an awful lot of them. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Jeffrey.
Well, thank you. I don't know if my memory is quite the same, but that was a good event anyway. And we got a nice opportunity to chat there, too, and get to know each other a bit.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So, I don't know, I mean, you've done a basic, pretty good introduction to me already. I could just get into demoing, or you want to, how do you want to go from here, actually?
Well, I know one of the other little trivia bits that I knew that from a while back was that you were one of the few people that I knew back in the day who had an electronic drum kit. Do you still play regularly?
Actually, I played it yesterday. With my 5-year-old kid, we turned it on and we jammed for a while. So, yes, it was a lot of fun.
Awesome. I actually just got one for Christmas, and I've played it probably every day except for about 2 or 3 since Christmas time. And my 5-year-old loves it, too. So they're a good thing to have 5-year-olds beat on.
I'm assuming you're not talking about Rock Band drums, because that's about my exposure to electronic drumming.
Mine are like real Roland drums, but you can have different sounds. He likes the spooky sound, like ghosts coming and things like that. He likes.
My kid likes the cowbell. He digs the cowbell.
That's awesome. So, you know, Jeffrey, we've got your bio up here. We've heard a little bit about some of the books you've written. Why particularly are you so interested in Silverlight lately?
Well, I'm interested in .NET and wherever it roams. So Silverlight is definitely the newest incarnation of it. And I think it enables a bunch of scenarios that weren't possible before, where people could build these rich experiences, user experiences on a web page and have it run on lots of different possible devices. So I think that's really cool. And one of the things about that is that since your program is running inside a browser, mm-hmm. and the browser wants to give the end user a good experience, and that is not hang or not freeze up, Silverlight forces all programmers to do asynchronous operations. They don't even give you the synchronous APIs as part of the class library that comes with Silverlight.
Oh, that's pretty interesting. So that's an approach that people who have been maybe building Ajax applications have done for a while when they have some JavaScript that reaches out back to the server and doesn't freeze up the browser, right?
Yeah, that's right. They've had to do that for a long time. But now you can write in C#, of course, and you have a good chunk of the class library available. And I think a lot of programmers in the .NET world are not used to that kind of asynchronous programming. Certainly people who've done Windows Forms or WPF or even a lot of server-side code as well, they tend to do a lot of things synchronously. And in Silverlight, that can be challenging if you report your application to Silverlight, because you can't do it synchronously anymore. You have to do it asynchronously.
Right. Yeah, I've seen it as an option when you do add service reference or add web reference. The proxy would give you, in some cases, the option to do it asynchronously, and you'd have event handlers you had to deal with or multi-threads you had to manage and marshal back to the UI thread. But I'm suspecting it's a little bit easier now in Silverlight, right?
Well, no, that's pretty much all the same. So you still get your proxies, and you can still make your calls asynchronously.
Huh?
And in my experience, most people never use that stuff, and now in Silverlight you have to use that stuff. But the real problem, I think, is not just making asynchronous requests. It's in the coordination. It's the coordination of the result is what's hard. So what if you wanted to make, let's say, 5 requests, and then after all 5 of them have come back, now you want to do some processing to merge the results in some fashion? That's really difficult, and the proxy classes don't offer you any help with that. And then, as you mentioned, the marshaling back to the GUI thread is another thing that you have to do in Silverlight or WPF or Windows Forms. And these are the various pain points that exist, which my power threading library tries to address all
Fantastic.
Of these things. Yeah.
Well, that sounds cool. Let's take a look if you've got your desktop ready to share. Maybe we can start with the basics of we can familiarize folks with the basics of the asynchronous callbacks from Silverlight and then take a look at some of the pain points.
All right. Well, very good. So I'm sharing my desktop now. I assume everyone can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, that's good.
So I actually asked my cohort, Jeff Procise at Winselect, to give me a Silverlight demo because he's really our Silverlight expert. I'm Winselect's threading expert.
Ah.
And he gave me this demo here. That's a Silverlight app that calls into Flickr, making REST requests. So first I just want to run this. I have it running inside Internet Explorer, and I just want to show what it does. I'm going to type in here to do a request for Silverlight against Flickr's photo search. So this is going to end up making a request out to Flickr for 10 photos that somehow have the word Silverlight associated with them in their metadata. And then those 10 pictures are going to come back, and then we're going to draw them inside the browser using Silverlight. And I want you to notice there is some animations here. I don't know how the animations are going to go, over the live meeting here, but hopefully it'll work out well. When I click the search button here, the text that you see on this page is going to animate up to the top, and then the 10 pictures are going to be downloaded from Flickr, and then they will appear also with some animations in the screen. So let me click search. And there was the animation where the Flickr photo search went to the top, and then 10 photos came in. All right, so that's what the program does. Then you can click on the various photos, and then you can move them around, but who cares about that? That's not important in terms of threading, so it's not interesting to me. All right, so that's what the app does. Now I'm going to walk through some code to show you how this is implemented, and I have the code written. Well, really the code that Jeff Procise gave me, which is the normal way that people would write this, making the various asynchronous operations that are native to .NET. But then I also have rewritten the code using my power threading library to show how much simpler the code it becomes. So let me hit F5. I'll run this in the debugger. the browser window is going to pop up, take us right to the same page. For some reason, when I start this, this comes up here. But if I hit F5 to refresh, it goes back to the middle. So I don't know what that's about, but we're not worried about it. Then I will type in Silverlight again, Silverlight, and I will click on the search button. And when I do that, oh, one more thing. Let me move this to the left side of the screen so we can see the debugger and the browser at the same time. When I hit the search button, we're going to hit my breakpoint inside the Visual Studio debugger. So here we are inside the Flickr button click event handler. And what I first do is I grab the text, and you can see in the Visual Studio that the text was Silverlight, and I produce a string out of that. Now, I make a web request, http://webrequest.createcall, and then I call begin_get_response. Begin_get_response is using the .NET's asynchronous programming model, which has been part of .NET since version 1.0. And the HTTP web request class supports that model. And so this effectively says, go out to Flickr and find out what images there are that contain the word Silverlight in their metadata. And this will do it asynchronously, of course. And then I also pass in here as the first argument, web request completed. That's the name of the function that should be called by a thread pool thread when the IO operation completes. And I have already placed a breakpoint there. So when this completes, we will get to a breakpoint inside the debugger. One other thing I'd like to point out in the debugger here is I have the threads window open at the bottom. And right now you see we're executing on the main thread, or the graphical user interface thread. And you also see that there happens to be a worker thread in here right now. Let me just hit F5 to let this execute. We'll make the request off the Flickr, and then we make it to this callback function, web request complete. And you see now in the threads window that we're executing on a thread pool's worker thread. We are not on the graphical user interface thread for the browser.
Okay.
What that means is inside this method here, I am not allowed to do anything that manipulates UI. I can't change a control. I can't do an animation. We're using this particular thread. So what I do in here, though, is I make a request to end_get_response, and that's going to give me the result back now that Flickr has returned. And then I get the final results of that, convert it to a string, and now I want to update the UI. So in order to do that, I have to call beginInvoke on a dispatcher object, and I pass the beginInvoke the name of the function that's going to do the updating of the UI. And I passed in here updateUI, which is the name of the method right below. If I scroll to the left, you'll see updateUI right here. And when I execute this, we hit our next breakpoint, which is at this method here. And you'll notice in the threads window, we are back on the main thread. And so the code in here is now allowed to update the user interface. Inside here, I go and I grab that string result that we got back from Flickr. And then I have a storyboard, which is going to animate these controls in the browser up to the top of the browser. And whenever you have a storyboard and you want to know when that's completed, you register with its completed event handler, and you give the name of a function that should be executed when that asynchronous operation completes. And that method is called search panel storyboard complete, and right below is where I have that method defined, and I've placed a breakpoint there as well. So I set that event handler, and then I call begin to initiate this asynchronous operation to start the storyboard. I'll just hit F5 to let that go, and we make up to our breakpoint. Now, some of you will notice that this is not actually updated in the browser yet, and that's because the GUI thread is blocked right here at a breakpoint inside the debugger, and so it's not able to do the work. Mm. If I wasn't stopped at the breakpoint, then you would see that animation shooting up. Right, next thing I do in here now, let's pretend that that animation did actually complete. I then go and clear out all the children in that window. Of course, there were no to begin with, so that didn't do anything visible. And then I'm going to make 10 requests back to Flickr, one request to get each photo, up to 10 photos back. And to
so
do
up
that,
to this point, you only got textual data that had a URL maybe to each picture, right?
Right, exactly. It has, for each picture, you get the ID of the picture, what server farm it's on, a server, some secret. So this is what came back in one XML text string, basically. Mm-hmm. Then this code above parses that, and now I want to go and actually get the JPEG images for each of those. Exactly. So in this for each loop here, I then create a web client request, and this uses the event-based asynchronous programming model. So instead of the begin and end asynchronous programming model, starting with .NET 2.0, which shipped with Visual Studio 2005, Microsoft introduced a second asynchronous programming model. And the web client is a class that ships with .NET 2.0 that uses that second model called the event-based model. And since it's event-based, what I do next is I register with this onRead completed event. And I'm saying to the web client, I'm going to start an asynchronous operation soon. And when I do that, I need you to call this method onRead completed when it's done. And then here is where I actually initiate the asynchronous request. So I then say, go ahead, and then I produce this URI that contains the form and the various other pieces of information, which photo I want, what server, the ID of the photo, all of that stuff. And now I've initiated that request, and then I loop back around. I'm going to do that 9 more times to get back 10 photos in total. And as each one of those photos comes back from Flickr, then this onRead completed method will be called, which of course is right below. And I don't have a breakpoint here, but basically what it does, and I'm not going to step through it, but basically it just grabs the image and it creates a child control in Silverlight, and then it draws the image on the screen. So I'll just hit F5 and let it run to completion. You see the animation completed, moving everything to the top. You see I just got some email. And I'll just leave it there. And there are the 10 photos which I can click on and drag around. All right, so that is how this is done using basically what ships with Silverlight and the .NET framework for Silverlight in doing this, to do this asynchronous operations. I can pause here for any discussion or questions or anything.
So I'm guessing that you probably don't think that that's the ideal way of doing things, and it does seem a little bit intimidating and perhaps a little on the verbose side.
Well, definitely. You know, the various pain points are you have to write separate functions for everything. And when you write separate functions, that means that any local variables or arguments you have in one function, they're not accessible to another function. So that means you typically have to wrap up any state that you need to share between the functions into some separate class. That is very tedious. Then, of course, the marshalling to the GUI thread. You know, also an extra step that you have to be cognizant of, you have to do the right thing, and you have to write code about that. So, again, makes it a little bit more challenging. And then, what if we wanted to modify this program to say, well, after all 10 photos have come in, then I want to do something. See, right now, they all just come in when they come in, and then they paint. But what if you needed to know after all those asynchronous operations are done? There's nothing built into Silverlight to help you do that kind of coordination. Mm-hmm. And the code in my Power Threading library makes everything I've just described, plus a few more things like progress reporting, cancellation, timeout, just very native and very easy to integrate in.
Now, the demo here used the web request first and then the web client.
That's right.
Now, the web request, I think, supports more HTTP verbs than web client does, right?
Yes, it does.
So I'm just wondering, in this particular demo, you probably could use web client for both, but I'm not sure.
Yes, I could have, although there are, I mean, oh, I could have, oh, could I, well, I understand the question now.
And, yeah.
And I'll go back to, I stole this code from Jeff Procise.
Gotcha. He was probably using it to illustrate the usage of either of those in a given scenario.
And it works out really well for me that way. So
yeah.
I do want to demonstrate with my Power Threading library that I can use the begin and end pattern, and then I can also use the eventing pattern. And they all integrate into the same place. So
right.
Programmers can pick and choose whatever is the best class for a particular task, and it doesn't matter to me. It all just works.
Sure. Okay. So, what's the solution?
Okay, well, I wouldn't say it's a solution, but let's say an improvement.
Okay.
I will define at the top of my source code async enumerator, which will disable all the code that I just showed you and will enable basically the same kind of code, but now it uses my async enumerator class that's in the Silverlight version of my Power Threading library. I have just recently added two features to my async enumerator, which actually is not available yet on the website, so I'm still doing some testing, but I intend to demonstrate them both here. And one of them is this really advanced and what I think is very awesome debugging support. And to really leverage the debugging support, I also have this defined as well, which I'll explain later why I use.
Okay.
And then another feature that I've added is now this feature to use the event-based model in with my async enumerator. My async enumerator used to only support the begin and end pattern, but now I support that as well as the event-based model. So let me hit F5, and I will compile the code and rerun it here in the browser. And let me move the window off to the side. There it is. We'll come over here, and again, I will do a search for Silverlight and click the search button, and then we'll hit my breakpoint. So here we are in that flicker button click event again, just like we were before, but now this code, which started everything rolling last time, is now commented out, and there's this code in the else block that is now was the code that we will execute. So again, I get the same input string, which is Silverlight, that came out of the text control. And now on my async enumerator class, I'm calling this static method enable debug support, which typically you would only do in a debug build of your code, because that's going to turn on some additional checking that I will do internally, but that checking comes at a performance hit. So you probably only want it in a debug build and not in a release build. Okay. Then what I do is I new up an async enumerator. This is my class that's going to give you a synchronous programming model for doing asynchronous operations. And that's really the summary of this class in a nutshell. It allows you to do asynchronous operations, but by way of a synchronous programming model, which programmers have been using for years and they love. One of the parameters I pass to async enumerator is this string, and this is really just for debugging purposes. Every time you create an async enumerator, you can give it a string name to identify it, and then internally I keep track of all the async enumerator objects that are in flight. And again, I have more email. All right, I guess I'll turn that off. Well, except I can't figure out how. So we'll just hope it doesn't happen too often. So this way, you could just stop at breakpoint at any moment, and you can see all the different asynchronous operations that are currently going on. And again, this is a new feature. This is the first time I'm showing it to anybody, and I'm really excited by it. All right, the next thing that I do is on the async enumerator, I call begin execute. And that is going to start some workflow of operations that you code up synchronously, but they're all asynchronous. And this method will return immediately so that the thread that's making this call, which is the main thread, that's your GUI thread, will go back and the user interface of the browser will stay responsive. So it doesn't hang while performing all these various operations.
Okay.
And the function that's going to start this whole ball rolling is this function called getPhotos, which is, of course, right below. And I pass into it the async enumerator object in, and I pass into it the input string Silverlight that we're going to do searching on. And then I'll just hit F11 to step into this method here, and now we'll walk through what it does internally. Maybe to make this a little bit easier, I will make the Visual Studio window a little wider. There we are. Okay, so now what I do is the same code I had before. I call the HTTP web request create, which goes and creates the original request that I want to make out to Flickr. Then I have this new feature on my async enumerator to set an operation tag, and this is for debugging. I'll go to explain that later on. Then I call begin get response. But last time when I called begin get response in the previous version of the code, I passed here for the first parameter the name of the method that should be called when the operation completes. And that was a separate function. Now I'm passing in the name of a function that's on my async enumerator class itself. And so when this asynchronous operation completes, the thread pool thread is going to notify my async enumerator and will tell me that the operation is done. Then what I say in here is yield return 1. This yield return is a relatively new C# feature that was introduced in C# 2.0, and it can be used in a method that's called an iterator. And an iterator method is basically a way for people to write simple code in C#, and the compiler turns it into a state machine, and I'm leveraging that feature. What this is going to mean for me is that when this thread returns from this yield return 1, the thread's actually going to return back to the message pump and keep the user interface alive. And then my code calls back in here right below, and this happens on when the IO operation completes. So instead of writing the callback function, a separate callback function, I now get to write the code directly in line. And after the yield return 1, the code after that starts running when the IO operation is done. The beautiful thing about this is that you're now writing all your code in a single method. And any arguments or any local variables that you define inside this method, like I have this request variable here and I have these arguments are being passed in, they are now available completely throughout this method for me. The C# compiler ensures that for me. So I don't have to do any tracking of any of that. You might also notice that when we come back here, I'm on the main thread. That's because my async enumerator knows to call you back on that automatically. And so that extra step of calling that update UI using the dispatcher object,
right,
you don't have to even think about that anymore. I make sure that you're always called back on the GUI thread for a Silverlight app. And then you can just update the UI. So that problem goes away as well. So here I call NGetResponse. I get the string data back from Flickr. And then I want to update this storyboard. I want to animate this storyboard that moves this search, these controls, up to the top of the window. Well, that's really an asynchronous operation. And the way I did that in the previous demo is on the storyboard, I registered with the completed event handler, and then I called begin to start it off. And this method, whatever I pass here, gets called when the storyboard has finished its animation. Well, so you have to write that as a separate function. I don't want it to work like that. I want in the same function to just know when the animation is complete. And so here's another new feature that I've added to my async enumerator, which no one has seen yet. I now have this class called EventAPMFactory. That's a new class that's in my PowerThreading library. And this factory class is a helper that allows you to specify events. And when those events get called, it will notify my async enumerator to let me know that the event has completed. My async enumerator will start up your iterator again after the yield return statement, and so you get to just keep running, and you again write all your code in one method, sequentially, top down, but I'm doing all the heavy lifting of coordinating all of this stuff for you. So what I do is I say, well, I need an APM factory for event args. That's an event handler, and the second parameter is of type event args. But you can make it something derived from event args here. And then I say, well, I'm going to prepare an operation, an asynchronous operation using that factory, and when that asynchronous operation completes, notify my async enumerator by calling end. And then this prepare operation method returns a tiny little object that only has one member on it, which is an event handler method itself. And I put that into an event handler local variable, couldn't think of the word, and then I register that local variable here with the completed event. Now, the reason why I needed this local variable is because after the yield return, I do the unregister. But a lot of times with events, you're never unregistering, you only register with the event, in which case this local variable can be ignored, and the code that I have here can come right here where you register the event handler. Makes the code a little bit simpler, you get rid of one more line of code. Well, plus you wouldn't have this line, so you get rid of two lines of code. All right, so now I'm going to start that animation, and when it's complete, I come back in after the yield return. Again, always on the main thread, so you can always update UI. Then I get the result of that, and now imagine that user interface has slid up over here, which it will when I let the main thread return. Now I take that XML document that we got back from Flickr, and I'm going to make the 10 requests out using the web client to go and get each individual photo. Well, since that's the event-based model, I'm going to use my event APM factory to create an event handler that takes an open read completed event args as its second parameter. And then inside this loop here, I new up a web client, then I do some debugging thing I'll talk about shortly, and then here's the simplified version where I simply take the open read completed event and I call prepare operation, and I give the event handler. And now whenever that operation completes, it will notify my async enumerator that it's done, and then I'll wake you back up after those operations are completed. and now I initiate each operation, and so I initiate all 10 of them, and they all just go out to Flickr. They will come back in different order, possibly, potentially, they come back in a different order. I'll just run to the breakpoint. And now I've issued all 10. And then here, what I'm doing is I'm waiting for each one to come back, and as each one comes back, I will go and paint it on the screen.
Hmm.
And that's what's happening next here with this loop. So as each one comes back, they will get painted. Unfortunately, all this happens with the GUI thread, and so it's not able to paint while I'm stepping through the debugger. So if I just let it run to completion, then we see the images. Oh, still breakpoint. Run. There we go. There they all are. Right back there. Okay, now I just want to show one other thing here that's possible, and then I'll talk more about the debugging.
Okay.
Let's say that I wanted to issue those 10 requests to get those 10 images, and then after all 10 of them come back, I want to do something else. So I could simply modify this code to here say yield return count, where count's actually the number of requests that I made, that's the number 10, and then I get rid of the yield return in one in the loop. And by simply making these minor changes to the code, this now will initiate the 10 operations. Then I will wait internally for all 10 of them to come back without blocking the GUI thread, so the user interface of the browser stays responsive to the user.
Right.
Then after all 10 of them have come back, I will wake you up so you can then do the processing of whatever you want to do with all 10. Just a small little modification to your code. You can either process operations as each one completes, or you can process them after all completes with just a little change. And that would be really difficult to do if you use the web client yourself without any additional support. All right, so I'll pause here for any questions or discussion, and then I'll talk a little bit more about my debugging features.
I don't see any questions in the queue. I think
I've overwhelmed
everyone. Basking in how awesome this is. I mean, that's really inspired to use Yield in that fashion.
All right, well, in that case, I'll demonstrate the debugging support.
Okay.
So I'm going to recompile the code, rerun it. I'll do a search here for Silverlight again and hit search. All right, so now what I want to go is look at the watch window. In the watch window, I have a couple of things. First, on my async enumerator class, I have a static method called getInProgressList. This keeps track of, or it's a collection, that keeps track of all the async enumerator objects that are currently in flight. And if I open this up, we see, let me make the window bigger. We see that right now, well, there's none, basically, because I haven't done anything yet.
Mm-hmm.
So let me come over here, and now I've just newed one up. And now that I have newed one up, if I refresh this, it says here, that there are still, here it is. Right, element 0, there's one, and element 0, and there's an async enumerator called query Flickr photos, which was, it got the string right from here. And that it has not called a yield return statement yet. So we have just created it, I know about it, but it hasn't actually started doing anything yet at all. That's what that's saying. And if you newed up additional async enumerators, then you would have a collection here showing you all the ones that are currently in flight. Then I start my asynchronous operations, and I call this method setOperationTag. This is a debugging feature, so you only care about this method if you are debugging code. And you pass in some string here, which can be whatever you want it to be. Here I'm saying, well, I'm about to make a query from this request URI. And what I will do internally when this end method is called, actually is when I do it, is I will create a little object that says you have made a request out to this particular thing and it's still in flight. It hasn't returned back yet. And I am now I'll go and execute that, and it might already be too late, but if I hit over AE, well, it says here at the top that this thing yielded at this date and time. So that was the time when we initiated the request. And here we see that this operation has already completed, and if I open it up, it tells us here that this request to Flickr for all of this information has actually come back. If it hadn't come back yet, then under operations pending, which is, has a count of zero, but that count would be one, and it would say, here's an operation that you have outstanding, and it hasn't come back yet. So it's really easy to see everything that's going on inside your program and all the operations that you have requested out, but they haven't come back yet at all, or the ones that have come back and they're ready to be processed, and when was the last time you made those requests out. It really gives you a great sense of what's happening in your program. And if your program is hanging, not because the thread is hanging, but because you've initiated some operations and the server's not responding, it's now really easy to find out which server is not responding and in what piece of code you are at. In the desktop version of my power threading library, when end is called, I also capture a stack trace. So I will take you right to the line of your code where you called the begin method, and you'll know exactly which operation is not completing. In the Silverlight version, I can't do that because the stack trace class in Silverlight requires you have additional security permissions, which a Silverlight app doesn't have, including my library.
Okay. Now, would you use that information about what's pending to build progress bars and allow the user to cancel operations and that sort of thing?
I do not. That would not be the best way to implement that.
Okay.
If you wanted to implement progress reporting, the way that a person would do that is you would make a request off to a server and maybe ask for 64 kilobyte chunks, like if you were downloading a large file or a web, large something off a web somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you would make a request in a loop in maybe 64 kilobyte chunks, which, by the way, that's what the web client does for you. The web client class, it actually has hard-coded in it. 64 kilobytes is the buffer size. You can't even change that. And when you say to it, go to a server and download some data, it downloads 64K chunks, and as each chunk comes back, it fires a progress event handler. So the way I would do that is I would just have a for loop. I would get the size of the file. Then I would divide it up by 64K. I know how many chunks. Then in the for loop, I would just go around, and as each chunk completed, I would just update the UI.
Sure. I was actually thinking, will you loop through the 10 pictures that you're pulling down, if you wanted to do it there?
Sure. It would be easy to do that there. And as each one completes, you're always running on the GUI thread. You could keep track of how many have completed, and then you could update the progress bar trivially. Yes.
All right. So we've got a question that's sort of challenging the premise a little bit. So I thought we'd give the question the floor with this question, and then you can respond how you see fit. So the question sort of starts off with a comment, little bit of commentary. This is all very cool stuff, but I'm struggling to see what problem this solves. The code is certainly more complex in this approach. You can have a static count and event handler to handle doing something when all 10 arrive, and the event handler approach fires on the UI thread, so that's not a big deal. Is the real benefit here the use of local variables without packaging them into a state class?
That is certainly a big aspect of this, is the packaging of the local variables so you don't have to put them into a separate class. Yes. Another part of this is there are certain constructs that you cannot use across a method boundary. In addition to local variables that cannot be used across a method boundary, there are certain language constructs that cannot be used across a language boundary. For example, if you wanted to have a for loop, you can't start the for loop in one method and end the for loop in a completely different method. Or a using statement, which is common, where somebody wants to, let's say, open a file with the using statement and read data from the file asynchronously, and then normally you'd use a using statement so that in the close brace, the file would get closed.
Yeah.
But since if you're using the normal asynchronous model that ships with .NET, you would open the file, then the reading of the data goes to a different method. You would have to explicitly call close when you're all done. So using construct, any kind of loop construct, do, while, for, even some structured exception handling constructs, these cannot be span a method boundary. But when you use these constructs in an iterator with my code, they all work again. In fact, you'll see in here I'm using two using statements in here, although this particular case would work fine, so all that goes in a single method. So it's local variables for sure. It's also language constructs as another. And then there's all the additional support that I offer for debugging and timeout and cancellation. which I'm not demonstrating here, but it's quite common for, let's say, a Silverlight application to want to make a request out to get some data, and the user gets frustrated with waiting for it, so they might like to press a cancel button to cancel the operation. Well, there's a race condition there where the user presses the cancel button and the data might come back at the same time. And that race condition has to be resolved, and I take care of that resolving inside my class. And furthermore, I do in my class the coordination where if you issued several requests, let's say 10 of them, and then 3 of them come back, and then the user presses cancel, then you have to coordinate that with all 10 of those things, and that's also taken care of inside my class. So there's, and the constant marshaling back to the GUI thread is something else I take in my class when you even use the begin and end pattern. So it's lots of little things, for sure. And I think when you add up all those little things, you know, any single one of them, certainly somebody could code around and what have you. But when you add them all up and you package it together into one async enumerator class, like what I've done, I think there's a lot of value there. And threading is hard, and race conditions is hard, and deadlocks is hard. And knowing where you are when you make a request and something doesn't complete, knowing what that is and how to resolve it, all of that is hard. And a lot of programmers find that difficult. Packaging it up in a nice, easy-to-use fashion, I think, really has tremendous value for people.
So to sort of summarize, part of the reason for using this versus doing it yourself is making it harder to shoot yourself in the foot, which I happen to be pretty good at. So anything that keeps me from shooting myself in the foot as often as I would otherwise do is definitely a good thing in my book.
Well, yeah. A lot of this comes because of C# iterator. So, you know, just to be clear, if C# language didn't have this iterator feature, I would not be able to offer all of the stuff that I am offering. And so I'm very much heavily dependent upon the C# iterator feature. And iterators is a feature Microsoft does plan to add to future versions of Visual Basic and other languages as well. But VB today does not offer it.
All right. So Ryan has a question in here. He wants to know if we have to worry about multiple requests with multiple clicks of the search button.
That is possible. So there are a couple of ways you can handle that. One is when when you initiate the operation, you could disable that button and then only enable it when everything is complete. So then the user can't press on that anymore, although the rest of the browser's user interface is responsive. Another way, depending on what you prefer for your application, when the user presses the search button again, you could just say to my current asynchronous enumerator object, cancel. And then I'll throw everything away and track everything and get rid of it all for you. There's nothing else you have to do. And then you could create a new async enumerator and just start a new set of images based on the new search word.
I see. So basically, when your enumerators are canceled, you wouldn't re-enter that function following the yield statement that just had sent it off on its merry way, right? Is that essentially what happens?
Well, so normally what I do is I will actually wake you up immediately from a yield return. Normally I wait for the operation to complete and then I call you, but if somebody calls cancel, I'll wake up your code immediately after the yield return. Then there's a function I offer called isCanceled, which you would call right after the yield return to see if you were canceled. That gives the iterator code an opportunity to do any last-minute cleanup. And like if you had any structured exception handling blocks, it allows the finally code to execute, so guaranteed cleanup will occur. So I don't just never call back into you ever again. I call you and I let you know you've been canceled so you can do something more intelligent about it.
Nice, very nice. So right now you're saying this only works with C#.
Any language that supports iterators.
Oh, okay.
And of all Microsoft languages, I believe C# is the only one today that offers iterators.
Okay. Ken is interested in knowing the size of the DLL, the size of the library, the assembly.
Oh, the Silverlight version of the DLL, last I looked, I think it was 23K or so. Let's see. Desktop, documents. I will look it up right now.
Keep those questions coming in, folks.
Good question. And it is 26K.
Pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
And what do you have as far as samples with the library when they get it, when people get it?
Well, I have many samples for the desktop version. I have samples where people where I built ASP.NET web services, websites, Windows Forms application, WPS application, just console applications, because it works in all of these different things. I also do have a Silverlight one. The Flickr one's not part of it yet, but I want to add the Flickr one to the samples. And I also just created a compact framework library version of the DLL, too, which is not posted yet on the website. So this new debugger support and this event support, that's not available yet publicly. The Silverlight DLL is available on the website but doesn't have that additional support yet.
Okay.
I intend to add that by the end of the month. So by the end of the month, all the stuff I just shown you will be available to anybody. I also have a Yahoo news group set up for support on this, free support on this, and people can easily go and sign up for that. It's been fairly active. I got lots of groups at Microsoft that are using this internally, and I have lots of companies outside of Microsoft that are also using this as well. At Wintellect, when we're consulting and we help people build their websites for scalability and things like that, we're using Async Enumerator on their websites to get their scalability up much higher with an easy programming model.
So we've got another question from Pete. This one is, does this work with WCF proxies as well, and does it solve the service call chaining issue where you want to make X calls in a row, preferably in a single method where the call for N plus 1 requires the return value from N?
Ah.
That's a Silverlight issue that makes for spaghetti code right now.
So first, it definitely does work with WCF proxies, and I don't know if I fully understand the question, but if the question is, like, do you make a request and then you get a response and you make another request and you get a response and you keep doing that, you know, N plus one times, then yes, this definitely supports that. In fact, that's a very common model, and I've written lots of code that does that kind of model. And you just put a yield return at each breaking point. So you say, give me the data, yield return 1, then the data comes back, then you make the next request, yield return 1, then the data comes back, yield return 1, or make the next request, yield return 1, and repeat that pattern over and over again as big as you want to make your iterator. And managing the state is trivial, thanks to the C# iterators.
Speaking of the iterators, someone asked the question, couldn't you do an iterator in Visual Basic by setting up an IEnumerable?
No. While an iterator eventually becomes an IEnumerable, what is cool about the C# compiler is that you write all your sequential code and it turns it into the state machine for you. So all the local variables you've declared, it turns them into fields of the class. And any of those language constructs like loops and using, it unwinds all of that. So while in VB you could write a class certainly that implements IEnumerable, that you would have to implement the move next and current properties yourself, and then you would have to do all that unwinding. So you've lost the programming model, basically. Wow. I mean, you're just doing all this grunt work that the C# compiler has built into it to do for you.
In that case, the cure is probably worse than the disease, at least for now.
I mean, yeah, you might as well just write it the way you had it before, and instead of turning it into an IEnumerable. You're getting no benefit from that now.
Now, what does this do for testability of your methods?
Well, in a way, I think compared to the old asynchronous approach, testing asynchronous code is hard, period, no matter what.
Yeah.
And there's only so much that can actually be done about that. Testing everything with separate methods, I mean, certainly you could write some test code against separate methods and then force feed data in. And I guess if you rewrite that as an iterator, then that might be a little bit more tricky to
right.
do. But you're also not testing it. I mean, certainly from within an iterator, you can call out to other methods, and then you could test those with unit tests just fine. So with a little bit of refactoring, you can do that. The big problem, I think, when people leave synchronous, I had a meeting with an architect on the Windows Live core team like 2 weeks ago. And he was saying that one of the big problems they have with asynchronous programming was that, as compared to synchronous, is that in synchronous programming, your threads are always blocked when you do these I.O. requests.
Yeah.
And then when you break in with a debugger, from the debugger, you can look at all the threads you have, then you can see their stacks, where they're at, and it takes you right to the line of code so you know why those threads are blocked and they're not running anymore. But with asynchronous programming, you tend to have far fewer threads. It's not one thread per request. It's client request. And you're issuing these asynchronous IOs, and the threads keep going back. And so if you break into a debugger, your threads are not stopped anywhere. You have no idea where you are and what you're waiting for, because there's just no remnant of it anywhere inside your program. And it was after that conversation is what caused me to add this additional debugging support, where I now keep track of everything that's happened. And I think you actually get better support now with the debugging stuff I've added than you would if you wrote the program synchronously.
Wow.
Because I keep track of timestamps, and so I can tell you, you could at a moment say, what is the async enumerator that's been waiting the longest for something to happen? And then, since I stored them in time order, so you can see which one's been waiting the longest. And then for that one, you could say, and what operations has it issued that it's still waiting for? And then, if you're not on Silverlight where I can give you a stack trace, I'll take you right to the line of code. So it's much richer that way. So I think, now that feature only came in, I've added it like a couple weeks ago. Before that, I would say debugging was tougher than just having separate methods. But now with that, I would say the debugging experience is much better than even synchronous programming.
Okay. Another thing is that I believe Silverlight 2 supports sockets. Is there any advantage to using this library with sockets in Silverlight? Not that many people are going to do that, but...
Well, my library works great for anything that you can do asynchronously.
Okay.
So certainly if you wanted to do low-level socket programming for whatever reason, maybe performance might be one, which it's hard to imagine you care about it that much for that client-side app, but maybe, then certainly it works fine with that.
Mm-hmm. And any issues with, let's say, WCF duplex? I don't even think many people are using that. But
Well, I have not tried it, but I can't imagine there would be any problem. You know, as long as I have async methods with event handlers or begin and end methods, I'm just going to work. I don't actually care what the operation is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That doesn't make any difference to me. All I'm really doing is coordination. It's really all about coordinating everything. Mm-hmm. What you actually do, I don't care. That can be whatever you want it to be.
Excellent.
All right, so we've got a couple of questions that are not down in the code, but rather how do we get the code? So one from Pete asks, does the library come with source code, and what's the license? And then another one is, how do we get it?
Okay, well, the library is available. Let me fill the debugger here. The library is available for free to anybody who wants to use it. And you would go to wintellect.com and then click on resources, which I'm doing right now. Although it seems very slow. And then click on power threading. Maybe you people playing at home, the home version will have better performance. Here we are, power threading. And then this is the library here. I have written about it in three articles in my concurrent affairs column for MSDN Magazine. You can download it here. What you get with the library is what I show in this directory here. You get some PDB files and DLLs. The DLLs is really one for desktop, one for Compact Framework, and one for Silverlight. And then there's an XML file for IntelliSense documentation support.
Ooh, nice.
And then also include the PDB files in case you come across a bug or something like that. There'll be more information in the stack trace so that I can look at it. There's a license file here, and there's an overview here about the use. You also get a power threading samples directory that includes a bunch of samples code demonstrating all the various things. Now, the Silverlight version is only 26K, and mostly it contains the async enumerator and this event APM class to turn an event into the asynchronous programming model. Mm-hmm. The desktop version has many more features. There's lots of classes in there for reader-writer locks and spin locks and all kinds of other I have a command argument parser that's in there. Classes for doing low-level device I/O control, like changing the LCD brightness for your notebook computer, and a bunch of other stuff that's in there too. That stuff's not available in the Silverlight version, due mostly to the security ramifications of Silverlight.
Right.
And I wanted to keep the download size of the DLL really tiny for Silverlight as well. So I removed some of the features I thought were less commonly to be used there.
Yeah, I suspect the majority of folks are looking at it for server-side callbacks.
Yes, that's definitely my sweet spot, because mm-hmm. we want to build highly scalable, responsive server applications. I got a lot of customers who are using it for that purpose.
And as far as the news group is concerned, it's just basically that's the method of support.
Yeah, that is for people who, well, that is free, and you know, basically me or maybe some other people who've had similar problems, we'll be happy to have a discussion forum there available. If people are using it more seriously, and they really want some significant support for it, then that's available through Winselect, my company. We can do a support agreement and do stuff like that. But certainly, you know, people could try it and start playing with it. And again, we have lots of people who are doing that, and they've not paid for support, but they're running it on a lot of production servers, including Microsoft has it running on a bunch of stuff as well.
Fantastic. Well, we've got a few minutes left. I don't see any more questions in the queue. Jeffrey, where are you going to be speaking at anytime soon? Maybe.
I'm actually going to be speaking at a conference in China in February next month. I might show some of this stuff there. And on my blog, which is available at the Winselect website, I make mention of the URL for this conference in China. Also, DevScovery. Winselect has its own DevScovery conference that we do two times a year. We're doing it in April in New York City. And one of the things I do there is this day of threading, where I'll be presenting some of this stuff live there. And then we'll do the conference also in Redmond, Washington, Microsoft's conference center in August. I think I said that. Yeah.
Great. One question here from Pete about producing a version of Silverlight for Silverlight Mobile when that comes out?
I am hoping that the same DLL would just work.
In theory, yeah. That's
you know, it's all C-sharp managed code. There's no native. There's no p-invoking to anything. So I think it's just going to work.
That would be very exciting.
Yeah. I mean, it should just work on any Silverlight running on any platform. As is. And as I say, it's, you know, free for people to use and consume and download and whatever.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, that hour went really fast. I was really engaged in what you were showing there, and I think it's really exciting to see the scenarios where you could use this power threading library, Jeffrey. Let's see. We've got a minor typo on the slide deck here. So instead of saying Pete's blog, that should say Jeffrey's blog. But those are the links. So you can reach Andrew and I at our blogs there. You can see upcoming Geek Speak shows. We've got some interesting ones coming up in the next few weeks. We're going to have one on Virtual Earth for Developers, and we're going to have one also where we cover Visual Studio 2008 Team System Tips and Tricks. Lots of exciting stuff. So, you know, look for Geek Speaks pretty much every Wednesday at the same time. And again, check our blog, which is the first link on this slide. We'll be posting information that links back to the Power Threading Library, the articles that Jeffrey's written in the on MSDN magazine. Tons of good information out there. Jeffrey, any last words before we sign off?
No, just thank you for the opportunity. I hope people find this useful. And again, through my Yahoo group and whatnot, I'm glad to give assistance to people who would like to have it.
Great, thanks. Great to have you on, and Andrew, thanks for co-hosting again today.
My pleasure, as always.
Thanks, everybody, for coming to this Geek Speak, and at this point, we'll turn it back over to Michael, moderator, to do some final wrap-up.
Thanks, Glenn. At this time, I'd like to remind everyone that you may print a PDF of the slides by clicking Control-P or clicking on the print icon in the lower right corner of the live meeting client. You can either print those or save them locally for your convenience. And you should all be seeing a survey now in your slide area. If you could take a moment to fill it out before you log off, we do appreciate any feedback you leave for us.
All you need to do is follow the links provided to complete the evaluation. And I'd like to extend a special thanks to Jeffrey, Glenn, and Andrew for today's presentation, and thank you all for joining us today. This ends the audio portion of today's conference. Thank you.